Hello, I'm Janet Smoy, Investment Director at Burn Dolphin. And in this week's Burn Dolphin podcast, I'm speaking to Luca Paolini, who is the Chief Strategist at Pictet Asset Management. We're going to talk about all things macro and how Pictet is positioned in the current environment. But bear in mind that we cannot guarantee sources from outside Burn Dolphin. Tax legislation and allowances can change. And remember, when investing, your capital is at risk. Investment values may increase or decrease because of currency fluctuations, and future performance may differ from that of the past. Now, let's find out more. I'm very delighted to have Luca Paolini, who is the Chief Strategist at Pictet Asset Management, as our podcast guest. A very warm welcome to Luca for taking the time today to share with our audience Pictet's latest views on the global economy and markets. There are many things to cover, but I'd like to start by asking about your thoughts on the latest earnings season. So we're witnessing a blowout US earnings season, confirming very strong corporate profits and a strong economic rebound. However, some of the big tech names actually retreated, and companies that have beaten expectation were not really rewarded by markets. Do you think most good news are already priced in, and as we head into a seasonally more challenging period for markets, should investors sell in May and go away?
First of all, hi Janet and hi everyone. On the earnings season, I have to say that we have seen probably the best earnings season ever. We started, especially in the US, we started the earnings season a few weeks ago with the expectation, the consensus expectation of 25% growth. We are now well above 40. So this is something that it's really unprecedented. As you mentioned, some big tech names have reported exceptional data, and as you correctly say, the reaction was pretty muted. And that's, for me, it's not a good sign. It's a sign that, in a way, you need to, if you surprise, if you beat expectation, it's something like it's almost expected in a way. Sorry to say that, but if you don't, you get really punished. And this kind of asymmetric risks is a sign of a very, very stretched sentiment, a lot of bullishness, supported partly by the economic data. But to me, it's an indication that the expectations are very, very high. Positioning is very, very stretched. And this obviously creates a very difficult environment for equities because valuation is very high. So the upside really is on earnings, but you really have to surprise really a lot just to pretty much advance a little bit. It's an indication for us that the next few months will be much, much trickier and more difficult for risk assets in general.
Oh, okay, thank you. And nowadays there is just so much concern on inflation. Inflation is, front and center of every financial headlines out there, and we saw broad-based surge in commodity prices that are crucial in the manufacturing of everyday goods. And turning, to earnings season, a lot of the CEOs in many industries were mentioning cost and wage pressures. I want to ask, how worried are you that inflation is actually more persistent? And assuming that the Fed actually let inflation run hot for a period of time, what impact will it have on corporate profit margins and valuations?
I think when you look at inflation, as you correctly said, there is a, let's say, in a short term or a cyclical element and a structural element. Markets should discount the structural element and should, in a way, look through the cyclical part. From a cyclical point of view, there is no question that the pressure on inflation is probably the biggest I've ever seen in my career, and for a number of reasons. First, there are base effects, but even if we take out the base effects, you have a demand boom, which is honestly almost unprecedented. And it's not just the US. You will see, actually, you're going to see already in the UK, China is also obviously improving. There is a huge amount of cash parked in bank accounts that I think will be spent in the coming month, and you already see that. Then you have the commodity side booming, and it is not only, by the way, copper, is also agricultural prices, is everything. Transportation costs rising, supply constraints that obviously is a problem for inflation. So you have all these elements that create a situation where inflation is going to be probably the highest in decades in the next few months. Then the question is it going to continue? I think there are a few reasons why inflation, at least in our view, will land at a higher level than in the past, but will not be in a way incredibly high. And you know, in the past, let's say two decades, inflation has been between 1.5 and 2%. We think it's probably going to be close to 2.5 going forward. And the reason is because central banks seems to be willing to accept a high rate of inflation. At the end of the day, inflation is a monetary phenomenon, and central banks seems to be inclined to accept an higher inflation rate as a kind of the cost of pushing the economy to full employment. So I think inflation would be structurally higher, but it's not going to have a huge impact, I think, on markets. It's not going to have a huge impact on margin, but short term, an inflation scare is very likely. And that's one also the reason why we are more cautious on risk assets in the short term.
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing, basically activity booming and demand being very strong. And in fact, most recently, Janet Yellen has mentioned that interest rates may have to rise modestly to prevent the US economy from overheating. And that comment itself actually led to a big sell-off in stocks on that day. Well, Jay Powell tries to talk dovish to markets at every chance, but I mean, at some point in the cycle, the Federal Reserve will have to scale back its massive stimulus and raise interest rate. So when do you expect that to happen? And where will the US 10-year Treasury yield end up if that is the case?
Now, first of all, let me say that I think the Fed is taking a big risk here because, I mean, the US economy is growing at probably 10% annualized this quarter. It was 6% the previous quarter. The unemployment rate is almost back to normal. And you have more than $2 trillion of excess savings in bank accounts. And I understand, obviously, why the Fed is doing this, but it's a risk. And I personally think the Fed should taper as soon as possible. I think that, you know, the lessons of the past were is that as if you communicate this properly, it shouldn't be a big problem. At the end of the day, we all know, and I think I was surprised by the market reaction to Yellen's comments, because we all know that the Fed will have to react. This is actually already priced in. I think, though, again, that tells you how fragile this market is, even if we are an all-time high, because we all know that, especially for the big tech names or the growth stocks, a lot of this kind of rise is dependent on low interest rate forever. And a small hint that we may actually end up in an environment where interest rate will not be incredibly low, still low, but incredibly low, is an issue. On bonds, I have to say that for bonds, I still believe the bonds are following nominal GDP growth. As long as you have a very strong nominal GDP growth, bond yields will continue to rise. And, you know, before we hit the level where, you know, this is a huge problem for risk assets, probably you have to be well above 2%. So I'm not worried about another rise in bond yields. I expect this to happen, but I don't expect this to be catastrophic for asset markets. But it is a new environment with slightly higher inflation, higher interest rates, and I think more modest gains on equities. And that's something that we have to be prepared for the next few months and quarters.
Okay. Well, given that you think the Fed should be actually moving to scale back the quantitative easing program, and you think that bond yields are going to go higher, do you see more downside pressure for growth stock going forward? And can you walk us through the areas of the market that you think will do well in this environment?
Well, I think that, you know, the value, when we look at the rotations, right, we always talk about rotation from large to small, from growth to value, from EMDM. We think that the rotation that is most kind of solid is the rotation from growth into value. So we think that this value will continue to outperform going forward for a combination of, well, partly positioning, valuation as well. Even on earnings, you look at the latest data on the banks is very supportive. So I think that the value versus growth has more legs. I also think, though, that when you look at the performance, partly has already reflected the shift from, let's say, low rates forever, from low rates, but not forever. And so I think that, you know, overall, we expect value to outperform growth in the coming months, but we also feel that all the cyclical trade is at risk. And growth versus value is not about cyclicality, it's something slightly different. So we like the idea of having cyclical value, but we are much more cautious on cyclical growth. And we think that the valuation element is one. Taxation is another one, which I think is much worse for big tech going forward. So it's more value and less growth for us. Is a team that we are maintaining.
Thank you. So turning to regions, what is your view on emerging market? Well, it is a beneficiary to global growth, and some areas of the emerging market is a beneficiary of the surge in commodity prices. But it is also an area that could be a casualty of higher US bond yields and QE tapering. So can you walk us through your views on EM?
Yes, EM, we are very bullish in the long term for a number of reasons, first, especially for Asia, which is pretty much 80% of emerging markets. Asia has pretty much everything that you want. You have growth. You have the fact that the Asian economy, even if some of them are leveraged, they don't have the same. We haven't seen the same surge in public debt like in the rest of the world. But at the same time, if you look at EM in the short term, you mentioned one or a few headwinds, but I think the key one is the fact that China, being ahead in the cycle, is already tightening credit conditions. And the combination of a tightening Chinese conditions, the dollar being resilient, the outperformance of the US economy, and coupled with, I'm afraid, this bad news on the pandemic that we have encountered, like Brazil and India, create a situation where for emerging markets, the headlines for emerging markets are pretty bad. And because a lot of investors, they can still, or at least until now, make a lot of money by investing US stocks. I think for EM is still a difficult period. And then you add the Fed. I think, though, that the long-term story or case for emerging markets is totally unchanged. We think, though, that the best time for emerging markets will probably be the second part of the year, where I think the global economy will be fully reopened. We think that the Fed will be already past the taper tantrum in a way. But for now, we still feel that there is a little bit of issue of headwinds. And for that reason, we are much less optimistic in the short term on emerging markets.
Thank you. So turning to bonds, so basically the macro environment we're talking about is actually quite negative for bonds generally. But for diversification purposes, some investors still have to hold bonds. I want to ask what areas of the bond markets are the most vulnerable that investors should avoid? And is there any area in the bond market that can still offer attraction and good diversification for investors?
Yeah, you're totally right. You know, when I speak to clients, the typical question, especially in Europe, is that, I need to have fixed income in my portfolio, but I have almost guaranteed to lose money in the next 10 years. So what should I do? There is no magic formula here, but I think you're totally right. You need to balance your risks. And in the past, quite a few investors have done was, for example, to adding on gold or alternatives, which is actually the right thing to do. But of course, the risk is much higher. So you need to have, I wouldn't say a risk-free because they're not risk-free, but let's say an asset that is more stable, more predictable in your portfolios. And you cannot, if you start with this assumption, you cannot really avoid being exposed to the US Treasury market. It's the most liquid in the world. You get still a coupon, you know, almost close to 2%. It's not something, obviously, that will make you rich, probably. But at the same time, it's the only place, I think, for us in the developed world, where you have at least the possibility to break even. I have to say that we have been a big fan of inflation-protected bonds in the US. Now we feel that with inflation expectation where they are, there is also more of a case to buy very long-term US Treasury bonds. But that's pretty much it in developed markets because credits are very expensive. So if you want to be exposed to corporate bonds, I would say that it's better to be exposed to equities. They're actually cheaper. What we like, though, is U.S. bonds, at least within a fixed income portfolio. And also in EM, we think that China, Chinese bonds, is the new kind of safe haven asset class. You know, relatively stable. The Chinese bonds haven't sold off like others. The central banks is more traditional, more predictable. So we think these are the two areas that we like: U.S. Treasury bonds and Chinese bonds. And in the long term, local bonds in EM, they're still attractive, but again, for the reason that I mentioned before, it's better to be cautious in the short term.
Yeah, thank you very much for your views on asset allocation. That's very clear. So let us turn to a bit more secular topic, which is very close to the heart of many investors, and that is climate change. We know that Pictet is a huge advocate on green-related investments and offers a number of dedicated environmental-related funds. So hopefully we can pick your brain on it. So green investments have attracted lots of inflow as many governments are setting aggressive carbon emission targets. Do you think there's a danger of green investments becoming overvalued at the moment? And how can investors best access the booming green energy sector without being trapped by speculation?
I think, you know, when we look at the green investment, and we can also talk about ESG in general, there is no question that the pandemic has accelerated a trend that was already in place. You mentioned valuation, you're totally right. I think when something in finance is very popular, what happened, of course, a lot of demand valuation tends to be very high, and the risk is that your return will be actually less. The kind of issue that we have here is the following, or the positive about the investment is this. When we, in our job, and you know, John, better than me, is that there is always this trade-off between, let's say, reward and risk, valuation. Everything that is obviously very attractive tends to be expensive. It's inevitable. But what is different in terms of, I think, the green investment and the climate change in general, that this is a team that we know is going to materialize. I'm afraid the fact that, you know, that we have this negative, that the global warming is a fact. So this is not like other things in finance, they can actually change quite quickly. This is actually a secular story that will be with us almost regardless of what we do. And I think because of that, you're almost guaranteed to have a significant demand for green investment. And you see that, by the way, by what the governments are doing. You know, all these infrastructure bills, all this fiscal stimulus, a lot of this is going to green investment. I think the key, though, exactly to avoid the risk that you mentioned, is you need to be very selective in what in your investment decisions. You cannot just say, well, I buy everything that is green, because there are areas clearly that are overvalued. But I think if you are selective, well, this is a team that will continue for the next 20, 30 years, again, almost regardless of what happened in the global economy. So you diversify on one side, you have the growth, is almost the perfect area. But again, you need to be very selective. And, you know, you mentioned we are, obviously, we have the capability, or we hope to do so. And, you know, when you think about green investment, it's not just solar panels. It's a lot of things. It could be semiconductors. And that's why you need to have the expertise to invest in that. But the team, I think, it's the ultimate secular teams that you want to be exposed to.
Thank you, Luca. Well, so much insight. And finally, we're really getting excited at the economic reopening and that we can eventually take a summer vacation somewhere. As an Italian, where in Italy would you recommend to our audience for the next summer break and why?
Well, first of all, I hope that all of you can have a nice summer break. And well, look, I'm very biased. I'm Italian and I grew up at Lake Garda. So if you're familiar with Italy, Lake Garda is the biggest lake in Italy between Venice and Milan. I have a small flat there. I go there whenever I can. You know, that's the area. But, you know, I'm obviously biased. I grew up there. But it's a lovely place. If you like biking, it's perfect. If you like hiking, it's perfect. You can swim. And in an hour, you are either in Milan or Venice. For me, it's perfect. But I understand I'm totally biased. So that's it. Anyway, I hope that we will be able to go. And I hope you will all have a great summer break after these very difficult months.
Thank you. Thank you. Italy is certainly a very beautiful country, and I'm sure our audience will be booking that ticket there soon. And I certainly would very much visit. Thank you very much to Luca for being our guest.
Thank you, Jeff.
And yeah, thanks for these wonderful insights and your recommendation on traveling. I hope our audience will find it very useful, and hope our audience will join us again next time.